Welcome to Irish Illustrated's Tracking the Trail. I'm Drew Mentock, joined by Irish Illustrated's senior recruiting analyst, Eric Thomas. We'll get to subscriber questions later in the show, but of course we're going to discuss Notre Dame's most recent pickup, Jackson Vaughn. He's the 18th commit in the 2027 class, picking Notre Dame over Auburn, LSU, South Carolina, and of course Miami. The Irish seem to be beating the Hurricanes a lot lately, but he's the number 105 player in the class according to 24/7 Sports and one of the top edge rushers in the country. Eric, he's a guy we both saw at Irish Invasion last year, so Notre Dame's been on him for a while. He reclassified, I should clarify that, about a month or two ago from the class of 2028, so he's a little bit younger, but I know Notre Dame was involved a lot in that process. How did they kind of get this done and get one of the top edge rushers in the country in this class?
Yeah, it started with early prioritization, and obviously Notre Dame has a lot of investment in New Jersey anyway, so I think that through a lot of the different channels and, you know, connections they had there, they heard Jackson's name pretty early. You always hear like, oh, this kid's coming up. And when they got him on campus last summer for Irish Invasion, I think it was really a validation of a lot of that stuff that they'd heard from coaches who had worked around him, you know, and limited experience at that point. He was just coming off his freshman season. So from there, it was really about continued sustained contact. Al Washington really led that charge throughout most of the season. They hosted Jackson Vaughn several times. And then when it got to this offseason, there were already conversations about Vaughn reclassifying in the months before he actually made the announcement. So Notre Dame was very involved in those conversations. Coach Partridge, who sort of took over when that stuff was shifting into the mainstream conversation around his recruitment, he was very supportive. He was very involved in those conversations from the beginning of this, you know, this offseason onward. And for Notre Dame, I think it was about continuing to make him a priority and really never backing off. Like, some of the teams that were really interested in him as a 2028 were like, I don't know, as 2027 that we have, whether it was budget or whatever else, there was different constraints that popped up that made it harder for them to prioritize him to the same level. And Notre Dame never let off the gas.
And what do you see? I mean, he's a guy, as I mentioned, we saw at the Irish Invasion camp. I know right now he's listed at 6'3", 225. Maybe he's a little taller than that. The thing that stood out to me was just kind of his tenacity for such a young guy. I wouldn't have thought with his motor and just how hard he was trying against players who are now on the Notre Dame roster and like Sullivan Garvin, Ben Nichols, like he was just going at them who, I mean, had 100 pounds on them. But what do you see from him when you maybe watch his high school tape? I know, I believe as a freshman, I saw he had like 8 sacks. So he's kind of been doing it at a pretty prominent school, as you mentioned, in New Jersey. But what do you see when you see it, and maybe his development since we both saw him last summer?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is like when we saw him in the summer, obviously there's no pads and the situations are really catered for the defenders to beat the offensive lineman. Now, with that said, it's still super impressive how well he was able to do so and how few times he actually got touched throughout the course of the day. What's most impressive since then is when you watch his film, I guess you'd call it a sophomore film, that stuff shows up in pads, and it starts with his first step. Vaughn has a freakishly fast first step. This is like elite edge rusher territory, get off on the line skill set. And it allows him to not only, you know, win outside with speed, which is kind of what you would expect for a guy in his mold, but he does set up moves where he'll go a little bit, maybe like a half step wider to the outside. And then as the tackle is oversetting and trying to get out there, he'll cut back inside. He's fast enough to leverage that and create, you know, an opportunity for himself. So you see the speed and the tools we saw in the summer, and you see that combined with a plan and pads. And it makes for a really, really impressive edge rusher that is, even though he's like built like a speed rusher, like he loves contact. You see him when I was talking with Tyler Wosiak about this the other day, like you see these poor running backs, future insurance salesmen who have to pass block him. And there's like the fear of God in their eyes as this man bears down on them and just launches them into orbit before hitting the quarterback. And whether it's a sack or not, like these are physically imposing plays. Every single time that these guys have to go back and try to run something similar, they're thinking like, oh man, he made me pay for the last one. So there's just that tenacity that you saw without pads. Like when he's in pads, it is something else, man.
Yeah, and he's a guy. I saw some of the interviews where he talked about he thought he would be a baseball player, even a basketball player. I've seen some of he's put some of his dunks on Twitter. I think he did like an in between the legs or windmill pretty easily. So he's obviously really athletic. Kind of curious too. He's as we mentioned, he's reclassified, so he's rolling a little bit early. He does seem technically advanced too. Like it's not just the tenacity and the athleticism. So I'm kind of curious, maybe. You don't always see edge rushers being the ones to reclassify, but it does seem to kind of make sense for him, given that he is technically advanced, physically advanced, but does need to add strength and size. So it does seem like that is something he could probably do easier on campus at Notre Dame as opposed to staying in high school. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I agree with that, 'cause like when you're at a stage like he is, where everyone kind of has an idea of like, okay, you're a really high value prospect, you've shown you're a combination of traits and production. Like, a lot of guys who would be in his spot that maybe wouldn't benefit are the guys who are all traits, right? Because you want to see them turn some production, you want to see them validate that. Or conversely, if you're a guy who doesn't have those athletic intangibles, you need that year of production to show yourself. But when you have a combination like he does, like, realistically, if your issue is I need to add weight and be a little bit more physically imposing to build into my frame, going to Notre Dame or wherever you're headed in the next step, in this case Notre Dame, and getting that sort of timeline to build with the strength and conditioning staff, allowing them to target stuff like, hey, we want you to work on these, exercises that maybe you wouldn't have worked on in high school. We think it's going to help you be more explosive as you add weight. Like, that's the kind of insight that's just so much harder to get remotely. And even if you do get like a workout plan from the coaches, keeping an idea on your progress, keeping track of your weights, like the simple little quality of life stuff that comes from being in the facility is just so much easier to navigate if you're on campus.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think too, so much of it is like adding size and weight is diet, and doing that properly is so difficult, even if your parents are on board and trying to do all those things, like having Notre Dame's catering services or whatever they're using. I mean, Shields Hall should be open, so they'll have it even probably at a higher level than that. So that is going to do so much more for him. He joins a defensive line class of Richie Flanagan, the son of James or brother of James Flanagan, the tight end at Notre Dame. He's also with David Florencio and Aiden O'Neill. Both of those guys are also top 100 prospects. Jackson Vaughn is just outside that. What are your thoughts on this defensive line class so far, and how does it kind of stack up in your mind compared to last year, where obviously that was headlined by Ronnie Dunham, but there's also Iwatade, Elijah Golden, some other big names. How do you feel like this class is shaping up in comparison?
Yeah, I guess the first thing I should note is that even though he's listed as a D lineman, Notre Dame's actually looking at Flanagan on the O line now. They took his pledge along the D line.
Okay.
But it's kind of been a back and forth thing that was made a couple months ago that it was kind of the switch. I honestly think it might still change back because he was like the Wisconsin Defensive Player of the Year last year or something. Like, he's a really good defensive player. So we'll see where that ends up. But right now, he's looking like an offensive lineman. But even still, to the heart of your question, like, you look at last year's class, and it's a little bit hard to draw like a straight comparison prospect to prospect because Dunham impressed in the spring, right? And even to a lesser extent, Iwatade impressed in the spring. So there's a little bit of validation there that maybe is going to confirm some prior. So trying to put that stuff aside, I think the ceiling for the 27 class is higher. And with that thought process, a big part of that is, as good as Dunham looked and as good as Iwatade's been, as much as I like Golden and even Tiki Hole at the nose, like, there's no interior prospect even remotely in the same category as Fuller-Rucho in the 2026 class. And when you pair that with a guy like, call it O'Neal, Vaughn, the combination, whatever it is, but just the overall complexity of the class lends itself well to winning with four. And the guys Notre Dame is still after lends itself well to winning with four. And I think the 2026 class, as much as I'm maybe bullish on the interior guys, doesn't lend itself well as cleanly to that. So I am a little bit more bullish on the upside of this 27 group, just because I think it sets the defense up to do exactly what they want to do against the pass every single snap.
And this class could still get even better along the defensive line with Abraham Cisse and Braden Parks, a defensive tackle, the latter. Both still concerning Notre Dame. Both are, Cisse is a borderline five star. Parks, I think, is just outside the top 100, like Vaughn. But in talking to Kerry Neal, who trains Fuller Renshaw and Parks, he sounds like he thinks Parks has the potential to be one of the top prospects in the country. So both really high-end guys. Where is Notre Dame kind of with those guys, and what would they do to this class if the Notre Dame got one of them or both of them?
I mean, Parks in particular, like if they land Fularancho and Parks together, that would be just a coup. Like Notre Dame hasn't had an interior line class like that in a long time, especially not one that wasn't converting DNs. Like you think back to like the Stephon Tuitt class. Like, yeah, he ended up being a great interior player, but they recruited a defensive end and made him a defensive tackle, right? Like that's a little bit of a different deal. Whereas Parks and Fularancho dyed in the wool, blue chip defensive tackles. And then Cissé is just unbelievable. Like he's every bit of that borderline five-star prospect. He's long, he's fast, he's physical, he is aggressive. I don't know that he's quite in the same tier as Rodney Dunham, right? There's levels to five-star and borderline five-star prospect, but I don't think that he's significantly far behind. And like I think if you're gonna run the gambit of like recent five stars Notre Dame has signed, like Rodney Dunham to Bryce Young. Bryce Young was obviously really good, but very raw coming in. It was a lot of athleticism. It was a lot of figuring stuff out, building the plane while he was doing it. I think Cissé is probably closer to Rodney Dunham, excuse me, than Bryce Young.
And to your point, I mean, I think the best starting defensive tackles Notre Dame has had recently is Riley Mills, Howard Cross. Both were in high school defensive ends who they got to eventually convert and end up working out well. I feel like neither had their best season together, but still, I think that's the best they've had up the middle in the while. And they weren't, prototypical defensive tackle recruits. So they're starting to get the skies. But that's all we're going to do for the, I guess, specific defensive line now. But you also had an article come up after Vaughn committed on your candidates for Notre Dame's next commits in 2027. So we wanted to talk about that. There's four prospects. I think all guys, people will be pretty intrigued by. The first one is somebody we've talked about on this podcast several times, legacy Julius Jones Jr., high four-star wide receiver out of St. Thomas Aquinas in Fort Lauderdale. He's a guy people have been looking at for a while. He has official visits coming up, Miami at the end of this, I guess this weekend, actually May 29th, Oregon June 5th, and then Notre Dame, at least for now, gets to close it out on June 12th. Why is he somebody you wanted to put on this list, and where does Notre Dame stand in his recruitment?
Yeah, this has been one that folks have been asking about for a long time. And obviously when you have a legacy like this, especially a high rank one, it captures a lot of intrigue. But even beyond that, I think Notre Dame losing Trent Mosley last cycle to USC really kind of put a bad taste in some people's mouth with the legacy thing. So that kind of put the onus more on Julius Jones from a fan perspective. So a lot of intrigue in this one. He has a tentative commitment date. And I say tentative because it's scheduled on 247 Sports for June 27th. I believe he's also discussed June 20th or June 23rd. And as far as I know, they're pairing his commitment with some sort of like fundraiser or something like that at the school. So it sounds like it's going to be a cool event. So we should get confirmation of that sooner rather than later, you'd think, for planning. But he's a guy who, despite the fact that he's down to three, unless Miami really just blows the doors off of this thing this weekend, this is really a two-horse race with Notre Dame and Oregon for the most part. And after he visited Oregon, I want to say the first week of April, the Ducks really surged in this race, and it led to a crystal ball pick being logged. There was, articles and reporting being done about how Oregon had kind of seized the momentum, and then Notre Dame snatched that right back the following week and really hasn't relinquished that. I really just continue to think Notre Dame's going to get this done. They made him a big time priority. He loves everything that Notre Dame has to offer. He understands the place. There's not a lot of selling they have to do about what Notre Dame has to offer to a guy who's been engrossed in his entire life. But even beyond that, like, his best friend is Zaden Gamble, his teammate, St. Thomas Aquinas, safety commit for Notre Dame. Zaden said, like, the day after he committed, he was going to be working on Julius, among others, including another guy on this list. Like, everything is in his orbit is sort of pointing Notre Dame increasingly as time goes on. He loves Notre Dame. Notre Dame's recruiting his younger brother, who's a 2028 safety. Like, I just really like where Notre Dame's at. And with that Florida visit canceled for the weekend of June 19th, and which gives Notre Dame the last look, like, I just think it's going to be very difficult for Oregon to win this out and sustain the following week's visit. Like, I just think the Ducks will have a tough time, even if, like, I could see a situation where we're all panicking the week after his Oregon official visit, like we were with Joey O'Brien last year, because it's like, oh, we're here and it's going to be Oregon, that he really liked it. And then he gets on campus and it's like, ah, never mind. It's going to be Notre Dame. So, you know, that one's, I just feel very, very confident Notre Dame's going to get that done.
And the next one, we're sticking in Florida with another wide receiver, borderline five-star, Ohsani Gales. He will be visiting Alabama this weekend, Washington, then Tennessee, and then again, at least based on his schedule right now, last one on June 19th to Notre Dame. He's one that I think fans may be a little less familiar with, but again, he's the borderline five-star, 24/7 Sports has him as the number 35 overall prospect and seventh wide receiver in the class. So why is he somebody you wanted to put on this list, and where do you think Notre Dame is with him right now? And at a position where I think wide receiver recruiting is one of those places people are still wanting to see a little bit of an uptick.
Yeah, this is an interesting one, because Notre Dame was, for like a year, Notre Dame was one of the schools that was mentioned as, oh, I'm really interested, I'm hearing from them a lot, you know, whatever down the line. But Gales never went to campus. And that changed over a year after they offered in April of this year. Finally got him on campus, finally got to spend some time, and he loved it. You know, since then, Notre Dame has continued to be a surging presence in this recruitment. And we've seen a couple shifts in this one. Like, USC was heavily involved for a while. I don't know if they're going to try and circle back and get reinvolved now that they have one of their wide receivers decommit last month, but, or a couple weeks ago maybe. But, you know, they were heavily involved, thought they were done at receiver, backed off. So some things shifted. And at this point, it's like Notre Dame and Washington are the ones where you're hearing like the, maybe the most, I'm not going to call it confidence yet. I think everyone knows the official visits are going to bring that, but it's optimism is the word Tom will use. I agree with that. I've heard some optimism from the folks in Alabama. I've heard some optimism from the folks in Tennessee. So really every one of his finalists, but Stanford seems to have pretty legitimate senses of optimism here. And, we'll see about this one. I put him on here because Notre Dame is definitely one of the schools that's feeling the most confident, optimistic, whatever you want to call it. But they're surging. They get the last look. And he's another guy that, like, Zayden Gamble is on. Amari Irvin, his teammate, Notre Dame commit, is recruiting him. And with his decision timeline, he's looking at June 27th as well. So if you're looking at like an official visit, critical recruit like this, where you kind of have rapid fire back to back to back to back, and he's trying to make this decision, it's going to behoove you to get that last look 8 days before he makes a decision. Because ultimately, even though there's conversations and whatever else is going to happen in between there, like, you get the last chance to make an impression. You get the last chance to give him something that's going to stick with him. And maybe he's going to, I don't know, sit with him the way something sat with Madden Faramo the day he woke up and decided, you know what, it's going to be Notre Dame. That coaching change shifted my mind, right? Like, things happen. And so Notre Dame's positioning themselves well to be in a spot like that, you know, for this commitment. I'm not going to quite say that, like, oh, I like Notre Dame to get this done, but I'm increasingly liking their chances. And honestly, if you had asked me 3 months ago if Notre Dame was going to land Ohsani Gales, I probably would have laughed.
Our next prospect is somebody you've already talked about, Braden Parks. He's from Chicago, Brother Rice High School. He has a lot of connections. I mentioned Kerry Neal, who was defensive line at Notre Dame in the late 2010s, or late 2000s/2010. I also, in reading your reporting, he's a cousin of Tony Jones Jr., former Notre Dame defensive lineman Chris Zorch, who also played for the Bears. Is his godfather. So a lot of connections there. Again, this is a type of player that Notre Dame hasn't really done as well. I think Justin Scott is still somebody people who follow Notre Dame recruiting remember going to Miami. He's also a Chicago native, you know, blue chip prospect from that area. He has officials to Notre Dame June 12th. This time they don't get the last one based on the schedule now. Oregon gets it the next weekend. Mm-hmm. What are you feeling with him? It seems like Notre Dame is trending better with him recently, but still a little bit ways to go with a guy who they have a lot of reason to get him on campus, but haven't quite sealed things yet.
Yeah, this is a tough one, man. And it starts here. The latest update here, as recently as Tuesday, the 26th, Braden Parks was expected to make his official visit to Ohio State this weekend, and he called that off yesterday. Michigan was also a team looking to make a move. They never got on the official visit schedule. So it from Ohio State not, you know, getting cut out, it really looks like those two schools are effectively out, and this is a Notre Dame-Oregon head-to-head purely. And it's a tough one because, like you said, there's a lot going for Notre Dame. And we've continued to hear, like, oh, we think it's going to be Notre Dame. Like, we think that side of things is going to win out. He has a lot of respect. And he loves Coach Partridge. Like, that's definitely been a major positive needle mover here in recent months. But the word I've used recently, and I think it's just accurate, is he's enamored with Oregon on a personal level. And despite the fact that there's a lot of people around him who love Notre Dame, and obviously from a even not even from a selfless thinking about the people around him perspective, but just from like a individual, how many games can my family come see me play? How often am I going to be able to see them and feel, you know, at home? Like, I think some of that's working for Notre Dame's favor. But on the flip side of that, there's something exciting about the unknown and the flash of Oregon. And I think Parks really likes a lot of that. And he likes Dan Lanning. And if it was purely an individual siloed decision, he probably would be committed to Oregon already. But it's not. And there's other considerations. And there's obviously 10 factors beyond which school do I maybe have a little bit more interest in at this stage. And interest is a broad term, right? I think, honestly, it's new. It's something like that. But I still lean towards Notre Dame getting this done, despite saying that. Like, I do think some of this other stuff's going to win out. I do think that ultimately with these official visits, there's a good chance that he's going to sit down with Notre Dame, with Coach Partridge, and realize that this is the place that I want to be. I think the interesting part here is Notre Dame definitely wants him to commit before that trip to Eugene. They want to get him in the class, get some clarity about, you know, the next weekend where they have some guys coming in on the defensive line. Like, how are they pushing with them? What will the spots left look like? So we're going to get a lot of clarity coming out of this OV, not necessarily just like, oh, did he commit to Notre Dame? But even if we're uncertain about what he did, but he makes the trip to Eugene, that's probably not the best sign for Notre Dame. So this one's going to be right down to the wire. I still lean Notre Dame doing it, but for a guy who seemed like a longtime Notre Dame lean, like, credit to Dan Lanning and the Ducks, they have captured his attention.
And the last one who you list as a wild card is Toa Satele. He is a top 100 linebacker from Hawaii. He's a number 75 prospect nationally, number 4 overall linebacker. He's a guy, he official visits Oregon this weekend. I feel like Notre Dame is going up against Oregon and Miami quite a bit. Then he'll go to Texas June 9th. He'll be at Notre Dame for a midweek visit and then finish things up at Cal the following weekend. I know there's a lot of consternation about linebacker recruiting right now amongst fans, so this would be a guy who people would be pretty excited about if they got him in the class. And I think in general, every Notre Dame fan loves a Hawaiian linebacker too. So regardless of his ranking, I think people would be excited about him. But where is, you mentioned him as a wild card. So why is that the case? And what do you see shaping up for him over the next few weeks?
Yeah, this is an interesting one. Notre Dame has been recruiting him for a while. It's sort of similar to Gale's, but even more kind of wild that they made the top four and that Notre Dame wasn't even really mentioned by like him in conversations and interviews and stuff as one of the teams that was really at the top of his list for much of the last year. Like Myron Tagovailoa Mosa, credit to him, really kept things alive and kind of kept Notre Dame involved. But really the majority of the focus has been like Texas, Oregon. I think Washington was heavily involved at one point, UCLA, USC, obviously Cal. Like there was a few schools, but predominantly further west. And so when Notre Dame made the cut, it was like, okay, well, he's never been to South Bend. So what's going on? What's the interest here? And then we see the midweek visit and how much of, to me, midweek visits are about priority, right? Like you want to be on the official visit weekends if you're a recruit. That's the preference. That's what you want to do. But there's two senses of priority you can take from that. And that's one, he doesn't want to push this thing out to the next weekend with June 19th, whatever reason, obligation, whatever. But we have probably a moved up timeline. And two, Notre Dame is important enough to him that he wants to see them before this cycle wraps up. So he'll make a midweek trip to do that. So there's priority and there's emphasis on getting out there. And the way I wrote it in the article is like Notre Dame has upside because they're the only team that has a first impression left to make in this. And if you're going into a stretch run here, if you have a first impression to make, you have theoretical upside. But the flip side of that is, unlike all the rest of these schools that are getting official visits, Notre Dame has one shot, so they have no margin for error. So it's a complicated one. I would still say smart money's on probably the Longhorns and the Ducks in that order, just kind of before official visits. But we've seen Notre Dame pull out wins like this at linebacker and other positions, but specifically with Polynesian linebackers, they seem to have these Hail Mary wins historically. So it wouldn't be beyond the pale for him to pull it off. I think there's a lot that's going to mesh well with him and his family when they get on campus. I think that Notre Dame's pitch is going to resonate really well with him, just from, you know, what I know about him, what I've seen from his interviews and things. I think the biggest thing that we're going to learn here is, can Notre Dame clear the hurdle of familiarity? Because he's definitely just going to be more familiar with these other staffs. And, you know, a lot of these guys, when we have these factors, it's NIL and whatever, oh, these guys go for money and everything. But when guys say they're focused on relationships, at least to an extent, you got to believe them. And he's a guy who emphasizes it's about relationships. It's about that family feel. So it's going to be up to Notre Dame to really kind of make him and his family feel at home that weekend and nail that, stick that landing.
Yeah, and maybe midweek visit with less people on campus, they can give them a little bit more of that family feel, yeah, when they don't have to prioritize as many guys. So we'll definitely be following to see how that one goes. And that's all for segment one. We'll be right back with segment two, Burning Up the Boards. We're going to close things out with segment two, Burning Up the Boards. We're going to start with a question from Holterk21. He wants to know, he lists a bunch of remaining targets: Braden Parks, Julius Jones Jr., Asani Gales, Fakatu, Abraham Cisse, Henderson, Glover, Satele, Simeon. Of those remaining guys, all top targets on the board, do you think Notre Dame goes over or under 4.5 commits from that group, Eric?
Based on where we're feeling right now, my gut inclination is to go over. It's tough though, because it's like, as you're picking them, it could very easily swing. We just talked about Parks and all that, but to kind of go into that, like, my first thought is like Parks, Jones, Gales, Cisse, and then one of Henderson, Glover, Satele, and then, you know, you have a coin flip with Simeon, that's over. So it's a really good group. There's a couple close ones in there, but I think they're going to end up going over. I'd say right now the two I'm most confident in are Jones and Cisse, and then after that, it's like a lot of, oh, Notre Dame's top two, top three, so there's some work to do to hit that over.
Yeah, I think Notre Dame seems like they're in a position too to, I mean, they already have 18 commits to get those numbers, then they're already in a good spot to kind of swing for the fences, because all those guys are pretty high-end prospects too. So I'm sure that helps. Kind of, they're not desperate, I guess, except for maybe a little bit at linebacker recruiting to get some guys on board.
Yeah, and Fakatu's mentioned in there. He's a guy I want to just throw in, I guess, an individual update for just very quickly. Like, he's at Ohio State this weekend. The Buckeyes are his number one team by his own admission. There's a lot of smoke around the Buckeyes and about their rise in this race. It would not be a total shock, and I'm not predicting, we don't even have data yet from this visit, but it would not be a total shock to see him potentially commit to Ohio State coming out of this visit. I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think it would necessarily be a shock to see him do that after any one of his visits, but I don't think that's going to happen. I think he's going to end up going through at least a portion of his visits. The big key is if he makes it all the way through and gets to South Bend, because if he gets to South Bend for his official visit, I think all bets are off for Notre Dame to land him. But with them rolling the dice on trying to get the last visit, I think the situation with him, and the reason I didn't mention him in the forefront, even though he's probably the name most people are looking at in that list, it's just a little bit of a question if he's going to make it to that visit at this point, I think.
Okay, interesting. Our next question is from Jay New. How did linebacker recruiting go from rough to tough?
Brian Jean-Marie is pulling it together, man. If I'm interpreting this question correctly, how it went from oof to, okay, we're in a good spot. Look, it's a lot of priority. It's a lot of connecting with guys and making sure they understand, like, hey, new sheriff in town, we really like you. Here's the idea of what we see for you in our defense. Here's the opening. And I think with this secondary board that we're seeing in the spring, where you're seeing a lot of these 4 stars and borderline 5 stars like Hayden Henderson's Tele, like you're seeing these guys show interest. It's because Brian Drumary, like he sees what's coming. There's 4 or 5 guys that are potentially leaving this next year. Like playing time is going to be available. And Notre Dame does not have a lot of proven commodities beyond the guys who are already playing and about to probably leave unless they get a bag to stay or something like that changes. So for these recruits, like if you're a good player, if you have the size and the athleticism, especially if you come in like even reasonably close to physically ready and you can early enroll, like there is a real opportunity for playing time here. And I think that the ability to sell that throughout the course of the spring and kind of really nail in on that, plus a lot of these guys having relationships with Jean-Marie from his previous stops and from just knowing him at other places, that kind of allowed the door to be open for familiarity at Notre Dame, even if it was unfamiliar before. So there's a couple factors that go into it, but look, man, I'm just really impressed with the job he's done as an assistant. I think there's a lot of work to do to prove it and to get himself out of the hole he inherited, but like he's going to have an opportunity to have one of the best linebacker units in the country this year, and they just need to get the talent and behind, for next year to reinforce. And that's really where they're focused right now. I think they've angled themselves to do well, but they got to close.
Our next question is from Kay Beasley. Eric, you guys talked about NILS podcast and how it's accelerated the timeline to pre-official visit season as teams want to know and then fine-tune from there. How do you think it will impact the decommitment market where certain teams, for example, Ole Miss or LSU, almost thrived on poaching towards signing day? Do you think with teams committed to using their NIL funds, you're going to see less teams try and poach others, knowing they won't want to pay up for individual players later in the cycle?
It's a good question. And I think what's important to bear in mind is a lot of this on an individual basis is kind of cyclical, right? Like some teams, like they mentioned Ole Miss, seem to do really well with poaching, but Ole Miss also tends to have higher turnover. And so they have to replace more guys and kind of be aggressive. And sometimes the best answer isn't in the portal. It's to go and get a guy, before the traditional signing day or whatever it is. So there's different contexts that lead to that. What I will say is I think it's going to stay cyclical. Some teams will have to poach because inevitably something will change or some unforeseen circumstance will pop up or a departure will happen. And they're going to have one, a little bit of extra cash, and two, a need. And so you're going to see the poaching continue. Now, I don't know that it's going to be moving forward as predictable, like, oh, Ole Miss is the poaching team, or for years it was like LSU was the Grim Reaper on signing day or Alabama. And like I don't know that it's going to be as predictable as that anymore, but I do think you're still going to see teams in desperation do some crazy things closer to signing day. And we see it in the transfer portal, right? Like we saw it with Brendan Swerby in Texas Tech. John Bryce talked about this on Insider, and who was the other quarterback contract? But Darian Mensah, the Miami Panic. Like when teams are desperate and they don't see a clear answer, very often the answer is throw cash at it at this point. That's just the nature of the era we're in. So it's not going away, but I do think to Kay Beasley's point, we probably are seeing a little bit of a death of like the Grim Reaper teams who really make their money late cycle, just because no team really wants to be living in those waters with overpays.
That makes sense. And yeah, Mensah, I mean, Miami had to pay his buyout effectively from Duke and then pay him enough to make a well-paid quarterback want to leave too. So yeah, that was definitely crazy. Our next question is from PA Irish 5. I want to be clear that I love the class Freeman and company are assembling this cycle. With that said, the player average is definitely a bit lower than prior years. Is it just a matter of letting the rest of the cycle play out? Or are they just leaning into and trusting their evals? And I just want to add that currently Notre Dame has the third ranked class in 2027 on 24/7 Sports. Their average player rating is 89.44. Last year, I think they finished fifth or sixth when things all shook out, and their average player ranking was 90.97. So it is a little bit lower if you compare it to at least last year.
Yeah, and I think that there's a couple things, and to the I guess to answer the question, and name would start there. Good podcasting. I think it's sort of a both answer, right? Like, I think they are trusting their evals. And a good example of that, as I pull the class up here to make sure I don't get the wrong Jackson, is Jackson Coleman, excuse me, the wide receiver. We have three Jacksons now. Jackson Coleman, the wide receiver. Like, he's a guy who, he's not super highly ranked. Being from Colorado, he's probably not going to have the most optimal path forward to improve his ranking, even if he plays really well, right? Like, the competition level is not going to necessarily lend itself well to a guy making a huge jump in 1 year. But Notre Dame sees a skill set they like. They see a skill set they value. And paired with that, they see a guy who, relative to maybe the market value of other players with his size and tools, they see a bargain value that is someone who's going to be committed to the mission at Notre Dame. He's not going to be someone you're too worried about transferring on an annual basis because of where the priorities lie. And he still has a skill set for a player that they see adds value in this class. So that's kind of a multiple answer, right? But then you, I guess, if you want to look at someone who's a little bit like outside of that, like just the ranking side, like Notre Dame took Sean Kraft in this cycle, the number one long snapper in the country. But no matter how you slice it, no matter how you try to, oh, he's number one long snapper, in any regular recruiting service, he's going to tank your average. He's an 80 player. Like, that's just the way specialists work. So, like, I think when you look at, like, some of it's just, like, trust the eval. Some of it's, like, yeah, he's a specialist. He's going to tank the average. Jackson Hill, developmental tackle. But once again, he's a value kind of guy. And then the other one I'll throw out there, and this is one that I think is bound to change just for the talent. But, like, Champ Mons, three-star. He's a four-star talent. But he is a reclassified quarterback who missed time. So, like, again, you have some of these factors that are skewing the ranking down that are even sort of outside what was listed. And it's like, okay, we watch the film. We see the four-star talent. He just doesn't have a lot of data to back it. How much are we going to see of him? If they make another title run, he's a good chance to really move up. If they lose early in the playoffs, his chances are probably a lot lower. So, like, there's a few factors in here that I think add up to it. But I think the net here is kind of all the above.
Yeah, I think the point on Jackson Coleman is really important. In the past, if you took maybe a lower ranked three-star guy, it was like, well, that spot could have maybe gone elsewhere. But now with NIL and having to devote, you know, a portion of revenue share, hitting on a guy like that who you think you have a big chance with, who maybe isn't have that national recruiting footprint to raise his price, there's a lot more value on that than there would have been in the past. And I think that is important to realize as Notre Dame is probably trying to unearth some of those gems, which they always were, but now it has a different value to it and
the
way it didn't.
That has
before.
A dollar amount to it, right?
Right. And our last question, kind of related to the previous one from Holt Eric 21, who will get a ratings bump? And let's go with anyone who's currently in this class or any of the prospects who we mentioned as high priority Notre Dame targets.
All right. So I already mentioned him. I think Champ Mons is going to get a ratings bump. I don't know how much, but you just watch the guy play. I think he's going to end up moving up a little bit. I do think Jackson Hall will move up again. Not sure exactly how much, but I do think with Notre Dame next to his name going into his senior year in California, his style of play lends itself well to a guy that someone in the rankings committee is going to be like, I like that guy. Plays with a chip on his shoulder. I think he'll end up moving up. I don't know if he'll quite do like the Charlie Tom move, like, you know, fly up the boards in the four-star status, but I think he'll end up getting a nice little bump. In terms of the kind of going up the board where guys have a little bit less room to move up, if you want to call it that, like, I think Lathan Wisenton's a good bet. I think he and Isaiah Rogers are actually both like excellent prospects. So that's not me saying I like Lathan necessarily a lot more or anything, but the athletic tools, the track times, like, those are all things that if you can put up another year of production with that kind of speed, like, you're just going to move up the rankings. It kind of lends itself well. That was always the limiting factor with a guy like Javion Osborne, was like the proven track times, and you'd see him get caught from behind, as explosive as he was. Like, Wisenton's not getting hawked down from behind with his times. So that's the kind of guy who can move up. And then as we get to like the top of the board, these guys don't have a lot of room to move up. I do think Jackson Vaughn will break the top 100. We talked about it. He's a man amongst boys. He plays at a really competitive league. He's going to have every opportunity to show himself well and move up. And then another one that I'm pretty bullish on that's kind of near the top, and again, not a ton of room, but Ace Alston. Right now he's hovering right towards the bottom of the top 100. I don't see that meaningful of a differentiation between him and Xavier Hassan, who's ranked 37 spots higher. That's not an indictment of Hassan. That is a lot of bullishness on Alston. I think those two are both like right in that like 50 to 75 range as prospects. So I expect his play will validate that and get him pushed up.
Yeah, and I will definitely agree on Vaughn, especially in the 24/7 sports composite ranking, because the other outlets that are involved with that don't have him anywhere near as high as they should. So I think he's the 244th player according to the posit, which I think is a little ridiculous. So I'm calling for a rating bump for him. You don't even have to wait till his senior year. Just get him up there because he deserves it. He should not be that low. But
I hope
24/7 does have him much more recently. But that's all for burning up the boards. Thanks to everyone who tuned in to Irish Illustrated's Tracking the Trail podcast. Eric, once again, I really appreciate you hopping on to talk about recruiting. Tim O'Malley will be back on Monday to host another episode of Irish Illustrated Insider. I'm Drew Mentok. He's Eric Thomas, both of Irish Illustrated. We'll see you all again soon.